Obi-Wan Kenobi. Now that's a name I haven't heard in a long, long time.
All that and more on the droids. Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast, and we have found our friend out in the Dune Sea. Old Ben Kenobi is back. Obi-Wan Kenobi, the series, has premiered the first two episodes. We're going to talk about the first two episodes in this podcast, so be ready for spoilers if you haven't heard them already. If you're looking for Celebration coverage, we're going to have a couple episodes down the road, maybe the next week, where we talk about what's going on at Celebration. I know Chris is chomping at the gonk droid to tell you all about
it. Glued to it. Glued to it. Got my gonk
family
droid.
Show, Mike.
Got my gonk gears spinning. But yeah, I've been drinking that 24/7. A lot of blue milk in this guy.
Ooh, just like me. I keep it going. I would say Star Wars Celebration, we will not get into all the news, but there's a couple new series, which is exciting. Reveals. We saw the Andor trailer. We're going to talk about, likely the Andor trailer is going to get a lot of love in the next week. But this amount of time has to be dedicated to Obi-Wan Kenobi and the first two episodes. So
Obi-Wan Kenobi. All right. I did mine. So we have two out of four have already done
theirs.
That's
right. Yep.
Well, Sam, you and I will work it in at some point.
We're playing Droids Pod Bingo. Then you'll be sure to mark
it. You know, a lot of these episodes of Star Wars streaming could include a bingo.
Yeah.
When you see a gonk droid, when you see a Tatooine, you know, there's almost always
yeah,
an easy
exactly.
bingo
I think
game
that,
to be played.
That's basically that center square, the Tatooine.
Which I will say, and Ryan, I wonder how you feel about it. I didn't mind any Tatooine in this. We don't need to get into it yet because I want to set up a question before we do. But, like, Tatooine didn't bother me this time around.
You know, it was like that's where they had to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's no choice.
In a world where like they were working within the confines of like a story that bridging stories that already exist, he had to be on Tatooine. You know?
Yeah.
It's not like Mandalorian where he could be anywhere and he's on Tatooine.
And it's not like Boba Fett, or it is like Boba Fett where it has to start on Tatooine and then he can go anywhere for a while.
Right.
and yet Boba didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We went some places, but Boba didn't go anywhere.
So I want to just retell to me how you watched these first two episodes. Not what your experience was of, we're all going to react to it, but I'm just curious, like, as were we chomping at the gonk droid? I think we've got a new trend
it.
Here.
Hey,
we got
go.
A Loathcat, tip of the old Loathcat, and Annie at the end, and now chomping at
and
the gonk droid.
That's a little peek behind the sausage, I think.
I want to know... Were you on standby, ready for midnight Eastern or 3 a.m. Eastern when they then bumped it up to midnight? Were you waiting for the next day? Did you have, reason to try to watch it immediately? I just want to hear how everybody experienced it and watched it for the first time.
Well, I was planning to watch it Friday morning kind of all along. Then I got your text that it was going to be up early. But it's kind of like not actually early if you're on the East Coast. So
no,
I didn't,
not really.
So I didn't do it early. And then Friday kind of came and went. And I was trying to watch it. This is one that Rachel was interested in watching. So we were going to watch it together. And then my parents don't really have none of the... There's no device in my parents' house that can get Disney Plus. So then it was like we weren't able to watch it when
you
we
should
wanted
give
to
some
watch
context.
It.
You're just visiting.
Yeah.
Sam, I like that you're like, listeners know me right. So well. They know
you're,
where I am.
You're located at your parents. But it is true. If Sam's parents don't have Disney Plus, Sam cannot watch it at his own home.
Out of solidarity.
Yeah, exactly.
So we've been evicted, and I did forget. We're doing this on video for the first time in a while, and I forget that the listeners don't have all the context.
That's true.
I'm visiting my parents with my wife and our daughter, and they're not as plugged in as millennial generation. So we couldn't watch it when I first intended. So today, when my daughter went down for her nap
Which, for those of you who are listening like a week from now, is Saturday the 28th.
Day after the night of the early debut.
Sam, I'm going to need to speed you up a little bit here.
Also, just for our listeners, Sam is holding a calendar up and just was pointing to the dates. So that's why Mike came in and said the actual date.
I watched it on my phone.
The way
on Saturday the 28th.
That's it.
The way that Deborah Chow intended.
What a way to get there.
Here's the nice thing.
Yeah.
The most disappointing and uninspired way to possibly watch the show. And spoiler country, I had a blast.
All right, Chris, tell us about how you watched
it. Hey, well, so...
Chris,
like,
where are you right now?
Well,
whose
so
house
I'm
are
at
you
Sam's
at?
Par- what, I'm at Sam's what parents' day is house it, Chris? Also. Sam, I'm in the room next to you. You should come over. Thursday night we started celebration coverage as previously mentioned, and so I was watching that, and I even said to the group, I said, they're gonna release it early, they have to. Everyone was so hyped at the celebration, they kept talking about it. I was ideally hoping for like a 9 p.m. release East Coast time, like a full day thing, but then I'm watching Celebration, and then all of a sudden I'm out. I'm passed out on the couch. I get a text. It's Mike. He says, hey, it's happening. They're going to release it early. I was like, wonderful. I went to Disney Plus. Then I read the rest of the text, and it was midnight. So I was like, all right, I could do that. I was kind of toying with the idea of staying up till 3. So then I put it on at midnight, and then I fell asleep after 20 minutes. Not because I didn't like it. Nothing to do with that. I was just tired. So,
because we're all old.
Exactly. Yeah. Apparently. I mean, I used to go to midnight movies all the time. What happened? And then, so the next morning I woke up. But then what I did was, because of that, I watched it. I watched it on Humble Brag. I watched it on my projector screen. And I did the whole... Got it. Put it on the big screen. I thought Obi-Wan merited some big screen time, so I watched it like at 8 in the morning. So it worked. It worked out well. Yeah.
All right, Ryan, tell us about your first Obi-Wan.
Well, staying up until midnight wasn't in the cards for me. It never is. due to extenuating circumstances, I had to be somewhere on Friday. Very long day. Got home. Was like, we're watching it now. I like waited. I told my wife, I was like, after you're done with dinner, we're both gonna sit down and we're gonna watch it.
When you say when you got home, you mean your parents' house?
Yeah, when I got home to my parents' house.
Okay, cool.
Home to my domicile, and turned it on, fell asleep immediately. Not because it wasn't good, just because I was exhausted. So then my wife watched both episodes with me sleeping on the couch, and then this Saturday morning, May the 28th, I got up.
2022, year of our Lord.
I got up at 5 a.m. to watch both episodes.
Wow. All right. This would be a terrible focus group for Lucasfilm.
You know, I'm sure this is the really worst everyone. This is what everyone
phone.
This is what everyone tunes into the podcast for. I really started us off on a strong note. I thought we were going to be really kind of rapid fire, but here we are. I will say I was intending to go to sleep. I have very young kids, and I was like, I better go to bed. Of course, then I just stayed up and watched the entire thing. Thankfully, I was on Central Time Zone, so it started at 11 Central, around midnight, and got done at about 1:30. Tweeted my way through the rest of the evening. Still didn't get any sleep. So make sure you follow us on Droids Pod. Sometimes you're going to get middle-of-the-night tweets
there
that are
go.
Really fire. If I say
I
so
now
myself.
Understand why Mike asked the question. It's because he stayed up and watched
it. He did it. He did. Yeah.
And we were all like, I don't know. I watched it when I watched it.
He's the
representative. I wanted to make sure that the listeners knew there was one member who was actually dedicated to Star Wars.
Well, we're only as strong as our strongest link, so.
Well, so let's get into it. Obviously, we're going to be talking spoilers, so watch the episode first, or the episodes.
That's the official warning.
I mean, it starts off with a pretty robust recap.
Yeah,
it really does. It was actually, I thought I had just watched the entire prequel series in the last week, and I'm like, well, this is still nice.
Yeah,
and I'm actually kind of excited to watch it with my partner because she has not watched the prequels in forever.
Yes,
and I think it's going to be a really good. The one thing I was waiting for, and I'm curious if you all felt the same way. Why did they not insert any clips from the Clone Wars?
Like the animated?
I think it might confuse people. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But especially because we'll get into this. It is relevant. But I think they thought it might confuse people. I thought the robustness of the recap was cool because, again, anything legitimizing the prequels I think is great. I said, while I was still awake, I said, if they have any nerve at all, they'll include the no. Because they had, like, him getting the Vader mask on.
Yeah,
you'll be called Lord Vader. And I was like, if they really are going
yeah,
for it,
they're doing
they'll
it.
Include
yeah.
the Frankenstein no. Yep. Which they didn't. So they still have some ways to go.
Right. I thought they would also throw in that.
I'd love it.
I think that while within Star Wars fandom and the Star Wars community, the Clone Wars is hugely popular. Like, so many people have seen it. I think there's still a gap between animation and live action in terms of fan base and who consumes it. And I think that even while they're introducing several elements that come from the animated series and originated there, perhaps, I think that those are being written in more as Easter eggs, and the main plot points are hewing closer to the live action prequel trilogy. Also, you've got, you know, this is the return of the actors, right? The two actors in this who are resuming their roles from about 20 years ago, right? They weren't a part of that series.
Right.
So in some ways, maybe that was a
totally.
Consideration.
It would be interesting, though, to see them kind of, if they bridge that gap. First, I think that little recap thing, I was about to hit skip, and then I was like, wait, was the prequel trilogy a TV show that I missed? Like, the way they cut it was so, like, slick, and, like, previously on Star Wars. Like, it was, like, so
I thought it was like, a beautiful, like, edit.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to, like, just show that to people when they have questions, but I think... If they had put in some Clone Wars scenes, and I hadn't even thought about it till this moment, I think it would have helped kind of bridge some of the action and stuff that we saw forthcoming in the show. I think it would almost been a good little primer.
Here's the thing that snuck up on me about the show in general, and like, well, I mean, we'll get into a bunch of stuff, but with the recap, I've been excited about this since Disney announced. Or not before that, since Disney bought Star Wars, and we were all like, maybe they'll do an Obi-Wan thing. So I've been stoked about it since then. The thing that snuck up on me on an emotional level was how devastating it is to see, like, the Ewan McGregor, specifically, version of Obi-Wan dealing with the fallout of the prequels. And, like, he's a great actor, so, like, of course it's, like, gonna do that. But it was, like, I wasn't anticipating, like... Oh, right. This is like, I thought it would be like a dude in the desert who was kind of like sad. They really play into the idea of like the tragedy of like his friend died. He's bereft with guilt.
Right.
He doesn't. The reveal at the end of the second episode, which was obvious, but like now that I was still surprised by it, that I was like, oh my God, he doesn't know he's alive. Like it was like, it didn't
dawn
on me.
It's also like the depth and nuance of the trauma, I think that's what you're talking about, of like the portrayal of trauma is so much different than maybe like the surface level we all kind of pictured.
Right.
Of like, you almost picture the kind of like, look, I don't know if you've heard it. Some people say Star Wars is kind of like a Western, but you picture like a man with no name, like out in the desert, he's wandering, maybe doing good. Maybe it's like the Ronin masterless samurai who's got some dark past, but you forget that it's like, no, this is Ewan McGregor, and you have an actor capable of actually diving into like and delivering on like, well, what would 10 years of like internalized deep trauma and isolation do to a person? And we're all dealing with a form
becoming,
of 2-year trauma right
he's
now.
He's becoming that old hermit, and he's for the first time, I think we're seeing like a pathless Obi-Wan, which like I don't know that we've ever seen that before, of like experienced that to this detail.
Also,
what you're saying is we're seeing
it's easy to bifurcate the animated one and the live action one because they've existed in such separate things, and this like really brings them together in a really affecting way.
How would you say that comes together? Because I guess when we were talking about the recap, I'm still waiting for more of those Clone Wars animated series touch points. Like, I'm waiting for Duchess Satine to be a part of what... Because for him, think about the failure of everything for Obi-Wan. It's not just the loss of Anakin. We saw in the second episode here the loss of Padme as well, because the friend that he had in Padme. And then losing the Duchess Satine, which timeline-wise is not that far removed from... Anakin turning. It's still 10 years apart, but like all those things happened to him within like 6 months.
My favorite moment of both episodes is the one with the clone trooper begging for money.
Exactly.
I could not believe they put it in the best way, where I was like, that was Tamora Morrison, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that, the beard covered his teeth, but yeah.
I knew you were going there.
So, it was just so affecting, the way that Ewan McGregor plays it, the things that we bring to it. Like, it works on its own, right? It works if you're a person who hasn't watched The Clone Wars, doesn't know who that is. He just seems like a compassionate person. But if you know all of the background of, like, this is a clone who turned on him, the same thing that they deal with in Rebels, where it's like, but these are people we fought alongside for an entire war.
Right. I mean, he was their general. Like, he led that army. He was their leader for a while. And then just to see them in that scenario, that was the first time where, like, I felt it, I think, when I saw that. I was kind of like, whoa, okay, things are getting a little real here on this series. And to the degree of, like, so in my mind, I had this vision of the series being much more subtle, and I think that's how I prepared my mind to go into it, where I thought it was going to be kind of this man in a desert, and we're basically going to be unveiling facts as he kind of wanders the desert. We got was something completely unexpected to me, which was a much less subtle show, and it was more like, we're in mid-hunt, and I think that's probably good. We're starting in the old... thank the maker adage, like, in media res, we're starting with the action already going on with a chase, and it's now enveloping these aspects that I didn't even think about. So the show is really a kind of a surprise to me, the way
it's so much more plotty. Just what I realized also about that clone trooper thing, my last point on it is, talking about it, the tragedy that, like, the clone trooper doesn't recognize him.
Right.
Like, it's like, he is this unrecognizable clone trooper. Obi-Wan Kenobi was one of the main generals of the army. Every clone trooper would know who Obi-Wan Kenobi is, even if they didn't serve under him.
Yeah. Well, also, I believe they said that it was, you know, in Clone Wars, the 501st is that main battalion, you know, obviously inspired by World War II, born 501st. But the 501st in Clone Wars is one that is always working with Anakin and Obi-Wan. And that trooper was wearing 501st marks. I didn't see that. I read that secondhand. But
wow.
Yeah.
And that he, like, the tragedy that it's like, this person doesn't even recognize me. That's how, like, different I am.
Yeah.
Too.
Wow. Well, that's a great little detail to throw in there. That's sweet.
I'd be curious. I don't want to, like, I don't know that we're following any specific order here. But, like, did we want to go around and, like, what were scenes that you guys found super affecting? Because I thought of two that I'd be interested to talk a little bit more about, but I don't want to jump around if we need to, like, do some.
Well, I think we can jump around as much as we want. Sure, I think the one thing I'd say is that we should start with at least the very beginning of this, and how the very beginning of this set us up for the show. I guess. Talking to what you were saying, Chris, is that this is much more of a propulsive jump into the story than waiting in the desert. I could sit and watch him scrape away some meat and take in his gonk droid clock in, clock out for six episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be happy with that. But they need to service this larger crowd.
Yes.
And it does. It works. It works in general. But Sam, to your point, we should think about those scenes that are most affecting. But one of them, it is very affecting for everyone right now, is to open up a scene with children in Order 66. I think that Disney Plus has added a sensitivity warning at the beginning of it, which I'm glad they did.
And apparently Stranger Things also had a sensitivity warning akin to that.
Because I think it opens up with 11 in that lab with other kids being hurt. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so I'm not asking to, like, we shouldn't go into all of our feelings about it in relation to the events of what's going on in the U.S. right now. But I think there's just a level of, what did you think about seeing more of Order 66 in the temple?
I think it was, for me, I mean, the most affecting thing was, like, it was great to see, like, prequel era Jedi heroism. Like, I mean, that instructor just immediately flying to action and, like, you know, shepherding her students out, and that, you know, that we see her fall. Like, I mean, I think in some ways, I think it was like even it was even a more painful Order 66 execution than the ones we see in Episode 3 in some ways, you know, because it was like, it wasn't on a battlefield, you know, but it was the moment at the Jedi Temple at home, and you know who's there, you know. So and also she's badass. Like, some cool lightsaber work on display.
Yeah, I think those moments, and we got a little bit of that in Boba Fett, right? And correct, yeah, was it Boba Fett? We saw that.
Yes, we did. No, was it? Yeah, because it was Boba Fett, but it was a Mandalorian episode.
Yes, it was the Mandalorian. So I think me, I hope they, because they're insanely interesting, and I kind of equate it to, no spoilers ahead, but with Better Call Saul, kind of the bits where there's bits in the show where you see Saul Goodman in a different form, and they use the bits really sparingly, but they're like really provocative storytelling. So I hope that we don't get the full story of Order 66. For me personally, I think showing these little instances that are important to future stories, I think where that would be the most effective, as opposed to, my fear would be they make a movie that's like Order 66, the Star Wars movie. And then it's just like, you know what it is. It's just it's just violence. It's like, I don't think we necessarily need that. We only need the moments that are important to propel future stories.
It's really interesting, though, that you talk about that, Chris, because that's exactly what I think they're doing, whether it is with Grogu, showing Grogu in Order 66, because we know that that's a tidbit that's going to be a story they probably tell about how he got out of the temple and who saved him. But then also, Inquisitors are former Jedi, right, who then became turned to the dark side. Is there an Inquisitor who's part of Order 66 who's in this show? Is it potentially Reva, who is Moses Ingram? Is that a connection, and why she's so motivated to capture Obi-Wan? We can get to that later. But Sam, to go back to what you were talking about, most affecting moments in these first two episodes, oddly enough, one of the most affecting to me was not including Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan is a part of it. I was nervous for Owen. I actually was nervous for Owen as he was being interrogated by Reva. Like, they did a good enough job that I'm like, I know he doesn't die until he burns to a crisp, but I'm nervous right now. And I was like, wow, the performances to me, and I think this is in general, I'd love to talk about the Inquisitors. I love Rupert Friend and I love Moses Ingram. I love both of them in this. I really enjoyed the costuming, the performances, but like the way that Rupert Friend looked. I know there was a lot of debate among Star Wars fans about that, but I just really found that very affecting, just that interrogation and him being put on the spot.
Yeah.
He's a great actor too. He's just so good. He brings a lot to it for like, and who knows how much he's going to be in it.
Hopefully we're talking about Joel Edgerton.
He's great. But it struck me watching Order, the fact that they included Order 66 here, just on a narrative structure. Obviously, there's like, you know, other things, but I realized how it struck me how much the snap is like Marvel's Order 66. Like, it's, and I was trying to figure out, and I don't have an answer here, why when they keep going back to Order 66, I'm like fine with it. Cause it's like, they're both these events that are like the fulcrum point with which the universes of these things kind of turn. But with Order 66, for some reason it has, and maybe it's just cause it's Star Wars and not Marvel, it has like a historic feeling to me where it carries the weight, where when I see in Marvel, they keep doing, like, every show, there's, like, a snap reveal where it's, like, actually this happened during the snap or like whatever. Right. And I kind of like at this point, I'm like, enough with this, enough with the snap. Like you've gotten your mileage, but I think it's because Marvel is happening like in the now where like Star Wars has always had this feeling of like, just the way it's framed a long time ago. Like
a
it's
long
already
time
happened.
Ago. Right.
Yeah.
But like, even so it's like when Order 66 happened, when we saw it, like the future of that had already happened narratively to us. Because
right.
We had seen the original trilogy.
I think that's it. I mean, it's kind of like the zombie movie thing where it's like we got to see a little bit of what the world was before. And we started as Star Wars fans with what we knew as the world after. And I think to much of the probably the genius and chagrin to many others of George Lucas, the prequel is kind of like showing us some of that. Mm-hmm. I think if the goal was to say, hey, this is how the world changed to mm-hmm. what you that used universe that you saw in the original trilogy, then like I think goal accomplished. Like he absolutely did it, and now this moment in time, Order 66, like definitely is kind of that. It's very cathartic, and I think I want to know more about it.
I do have to say, I don't understand because I've seen it now in a couple places where they continue to use the one Jedi who's killed in Order 66, whose falling death is the most comical that I've ever seen. It's the Twi'lek.
The Twi'lek?
Like because she just kind of is like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No one can see me on this podcast.
We talk about it in the episode 3.
Yeah, exactly. It drives me crazy. I can't believe they keep showing it because there's been an issue in even like Shmi's death as well where there's this over body movement in dying and then in the prequels at times, not with obviously Qui-Gon and even some of the others. But I just every time I see it, I'm like, wait,
George
what is
Lucas
still in?
Faster, more intense. That's
Mike's. So what you were saying about performances, like I do think overall, I think Ewan's great. I think Joel Edgerton's great. I like Moses Ingram. I think there's a few moments that everyone besides Ewan is playing a little broader than I wish they would.
Fair.
But that's a style choice, you know? It's like, this is like jumping, but at the end of the second episode where she's like screaming as they're like flying away, like, we will find you. Like,
I was like,
we could have just seen, like, she's a good actor. Like, we could have just seen her face.
That's mine.
We didn't need it all.
Fine. But it's funny you say that because I wasn't even thinking. I was thinking, honestly, a lot of my takeaway and what I'm thinking about is more excitement about episode one than episode two. I like episode two. I had a lot of fun. I thought episode one was phenomenal. Like, I thought episode one, you know, and I loved her in that. And, you know, the parkour and the overuse of the parkour of her in episode two. I'm like, can you please stop making me feel?
Is it? It's just
can I
good.
Feel, I don't
want to
feel less about
is that
this.
It?
Yeah,
the parkour is just easy to shoot.
That was just
the volume.
Wild. Well, there's we'll get into it, but there's a lot of chase issues. But
why? Yeah, because they're chasing in the volume and they can't go very far. So.
Yeah, parkour is the only thing you can do. Otherwise, you're just
get a treadmill
running.
On the volume.
But I think.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say. I think that I had an idea. Like I thought that Ewan McGregor's performance would be great. It's different than I thought it would be. It's still great, but I was not expecting the level of the read of it being like the level of vulnerability that he has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I was expecting to see like a very stoic kind of, I was expecting to see the Obi-Wan we knew.
Yes.
Now in the desert and like
absolutely.
A little sadder, but like the things that he does, like leaving toys for Luke at night and like the interaction he has with Benny Safdie's character, who's the character name I don't know, but
I think it's Nari, I believe.
But like that whole thing where like that dude's like real, I don't know why, when he actually calls him Obi-Wan, where he's like, I know who you are, like we know each other. And Obi-Wan has to be like, you need to, like, leave, man. Like, this isn't...
Yeah,
okay.
It's not what you expect.
While we're on this, so this was the first super affecting scene for me, actually. And so I think, like, just like you're saying, Ryan, like, you know, they're immediately sort of subverting my expectations of, like, where I thought we'd be, how I thought we'd
Sam,
be.
Sam, Star Wars is not about subverting expectations. And I'm sorry, but Obi-Wan has to be the badass that we've known him to be. He better not be out here questioning whether or not he should be serving the Jedi the way he's supposed to. He has to be badass and kicking ass in this episode. No, sorry.
And he's excited. For...
Obi-Wan would never cut himself off for the Force.
No, he would not. No.
Also, Obi-Wan would never hallway. Cut fish. He would never cut fish.
I'm excited for the hallway scene.
it's coming.
The scene with Benny Safdie, who I will say, like, as like just a general like film fan and like indie film fan, it did kind of like blow up the spot of that opening scene. Like, as soon as I saw him, I was like, well, I know who the Jedi is in this scene.
Right. Even yeah. though he, it is funny because I think he's very good.
He's good in it.
But yeah. it is like, he's whoa, that's a Safdie brother.
Yeah.
Like,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Safdie.
It's like if one of the Jedi was like Jim Jarmusch, you'd be like, exactly. what?
But it's like, yeah, it's look, almost it's, like if it's almost like if you're watching Star Trek and Cronenberg showed up.
Right. There you go. There you go.
But no, what? 3% of the audience watching this would know that.
No, they would have no idea. And that's why they cast a good actor. Also, it's just like, as a huge fan of Good Time.
The least the least subtle Jedi, too. He's got his arm way out there.
Yeah, he really does go for it.
Can't get I like the table.
That scene though, where they meet in the desert, was like where the sort of tone and direction of like, or not tone and direction, the like where we're meeting Obi-Wan in this series calcified for me, because what I think the reason that scene works so well is that they make sure, like, Deborah Chow does a great job of like setting the geography and making it really, really clear that like we are utterly alone. Like, it's the middle of the night in the middle of the desert. And Obi-Wan, he doesn't even play it in a way of like, we can't talk about this, let's move on. He actively denies, and he tells him you should go bury that in the desert and go away. But he doesn't say like, because that's what we have to do. The whole time he denies who he is. And he denies it until ultimately, like, I found that scene. So that was where I saw the moment with that you're describing with the 501st trooper, where it's like all the, you know, all of Ewan's performance is so subtle. It's so much pain and anguish in his face. And yet also like he's completely locked off. You know, that scene really hit me.
Yeah.
Even though it's a little bit, I thought like where it ended with like, you used to be great, it was a little overwritten, right? But like the scene worked for me.
This is like a real, we'll get into like some of the details they do, which I think are like really great, but and not to say that there are some things with the episodes that I'm like, I don't think this quite worked, but that's okay.
I have some nitpicks, but
I really also love how they kind of like, in a very funny way, kind of take the piss out of like the idea of Ben Kenobi. The funny thing about like, he tells people his name is Ben and no one believes him, right?
Right. He's like, okay,
because
Ben.
And it's because it's like, he doesn't believe it. He just like chose a name. It's not like this like super sacred, like whatever, like where we're like, oh, old Ben Kenobi. It's like he was sitting. It's almost like silly in a cool way. Where it's like he just chose, it's like if he made his name Charles. He chose a name that in the world of Star Wars he felt like would not draw any attention to it.
His
but
bladder,
to the point that he's
toast.
Like a dude walking around in robes, like kind of like speaking in idioms. Right. And then they're like, what's your name? And he's like, Ben.
Yeah.
And like everybody's like, no, it's not.
It only matters that Han like, Solo no one, likes like, that name, so don't worry.
It's because like no one in this world is named like Ben. There's no Johns. In like Star Wars, you know,
in
what
the
I mean?
Star Wars world, right? Yeah,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean,
so
there's a Luke.
There's a Luke. Yeah,
Luke's true. Pretty bad.
But also another person that they were like, let's give him a name no one will notice.
Yeah, everyone else is named like Chewbacca, yeah.
Except for the last name. But you know, which speaking of names, we talked about the Vanity Fair article, and boy, they are absolutely dead on. They are moving so far away from the Skywalkers. Not a hint of Skywalkerness in this. Not even really any offspring,
honestly,
of a Skywalker at all in this.
I'm just like waiting for this scene where they all hit their heads and forget everything. That's how this is gonna end.
I was really surprised. Were you guys surprised?
Very surprised.
I was too. We're obviously talking delighted. About a young Princess Leia.
Mm-hmm. We get to see Alderaan on the ground.
Finally, cool. Honestly, that was a question that was in my mind my whole life.
Is it's what a peaceful the, planet? There yeah, was no weapons.
We saw part of it in the prequels. There's a scene where Bail Organa's out on the balcony, right?
Yeah, but that's like seeing that's like seeing Coruscant right. in the remasters. Like we saw like
true. We didn't see
that's
any
like seeing
forest
the Republic
chases.
Get destroyed in The Force Awakens. They just kind of talk about
yeah,
it.
They just, yeah.
How well cast and well written is this little girl's part in this series? I think she's so good.
Okay.
I love her. Nobody agrees.
I'm with you, Sam. I will say there's parts of it where, again, less her and more of the adults around her that I have maybe small things. But I'd also say, boy, the swing that they took saying to do another iconic character as a young person and casting that and saying we're going to go do this after the major issues that they had. And also, even if you think about aside from the performance, the pressure. Aside from the performance, like, what happened to Jake Lloyd? What if there's this, I mean, there are people who are going to be upset about this little girl, even though she's doing a great job. And regardless, you know, Ryan, if you don't like where she's at, she's doing a pretty good job.
No, she's fine. Yeah. I'm not sitting here picking on a child actor. Yeah. She's fine.
I know you're not. I'm just trying to say
she's a bad runner.
I think that is
the
Disney.
Choices of this.
Well, that's because she's running in the volume. She has to run like 12 feet. That's all she's got. I think that this is a choice. From Disney, I think this is what we're seeing is they need to, if they're going to go dark, quote unquote, with Obi-Wan and having him cut fish for a mean man, I think they need to balance this because it isn't an all audience show with something for kids.
Yeah,
I think Mandalorian has that aspect built in where it's this kind of adventure and swashbuckling. I think Obi-Wan, since it can be a little esoteric and a little like the tragedy of someone kind of post-war, I think they have to do something like that to make it fun. Because I feel like kids probably aren't going to enjoy watching like a sad old man disbelieve his past like that. Like so, I think that is the purpose of these scenes, and it works for me to the degree of. There's always these moments between the prequels and the original trilogy that, like, there's some just continuity errors. And, like, I know it's a highly technical thing, but it's kind of like what Princess Leia says, you helped my father in the Clone Wars. Like, okay, she didn't remember she didn't remember being kidnapped and pulled to another planet.
You know, that doesn't bother me that much. No, sorry,
wait, what are you talking about? Yeah.
So in the original Star Wars, she addresses Obi-Wan Kenobi as if it's a stranger, like you helped my father. And I'm just saying, in my mind, it doesn't bother me terribly, but in my mind, it's like, oh, she didn't remember any of this. Like,
so I forgive
realistically, she would be like, hey, remember, like, you helped me. I know you, like.
So I actually, I think they're very.
She knows him as a guy named Ben.
Exactly. They're very conscious of that. He's never going to say Obi-Wan in front of her.
Oh, that is true. And they do.
And it doesn't mean that she like has ever seen him before.
That is true. And then they never meet.
Like Bail probably said, like, there's a guy, Obi-Wan.
All right. Well, there you go. I stand corrected. Paradox solved.
Because I saw that critique elsewhere. And I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, I think that they are being very deliberate about that.
Yeah, you're right.
I think when she sends the message later, when she's like 19 or whatever, it's just like a name.
Yep, you're absolutely
that
right.
That she sends it to. She doesn't know it's the same person.
It'd be great if we were all proven wrong, where it's like, thank you, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Leia, this is Obi-Wan. He's awesome.
that was the only Star Wars does this where they like they'll make themselves a little difficult paradoxes like this. They'll just like throw a fact out, and it's totally fine. I'm not picking on it.
They'll fix it in
a
comic book.
Exactly. I'm not picking on it. It doesn't bother me. I just thought it was funny. To me, it was funny. It was like, oh, we threw in another paradox. All right, whatever. Doesn't matter.
So I want to be clear. I think the little girl is good. I think the chase at the beginning and then some of the chases on in the city, it's like she... It's a classic, like, and this isn't on her. She's got little legs. she's not like running fast enough to convincingly evade adults, so they have to do that thing where they kind of like slow themselves down and like can't grab her, and it like it really reads like, especially in that first chase where they're like getting stuck behind like trees and stuff, it's just like a little silly.
It's so baffling that they also like, they didn't, if they were gonna do that, then like go the full route and like make it a little bit of like a clown sequence, like make them really, I'm not saying like make it goofy, like full on goofy, but like have something, you know, have a branch swing down or like some, find some way that it's like play it for comedy. But
yeah,
it's very much these actors having to be like, oof, you know, like
I think also tonally, but it would have worked better like if they're just gonna catch her,
just grab her,
just grab her.
Yeah, we don't need to
like waste. we find out that she's like gutsy enough later, we don't need to see her like evade.
So I'm with you. I just want to, so it's funny because I think maybe, so when I brought up Leia and I think she's like, I think that she's really great and I like the writing of her, I maybe to be specific, like I'm really thinking of like the dialogue and the sort of energy and direction that they've given this young actress and like that she's bringing to it is very much to me like, when I look at her, I'm like, I see a direct line from her to who Carrie Fisher enters as and then goes on to be in a way that I find like, wow, that's the magic of like great casting. So I'm 100% with you guys that like, I don't think every scene with Leia 100% works, but I do think every scene with young Leia that's like an acting and dialogue scene works really well, and I think that's the credit.
And so that's when she's interacting with him, she's great.
Yeah, I totally.
And when she's interacting with her cousin and dunking on him, I was like, "This is perfect. I love this."
I'm all on board for this storyline. I think it's great. I think that it's also like, I mean, if we're gonna go to Alderaan, you have to do it. And it's she's kind of the forgotten sister in the whole trilogy. Anyhow, like we don't really explore her. She's just as important.
We all talked about in advance of the show how much we were dreading, like, oh no, this is going to be like Obi-Wan origin story, but they like kind of can't meet. Are they going to do this stupid thing? And like, we were dreading it. And it's like, first of all, none of us were smart enough to think like, hey, maybe it'll be Leia, the twin sister of Luke.
They did a good job revealing that.
I just love it.
His refusal though, I mean, Obi-Wan's refusal to bail was great, and also loving that essentially we're back to the hero, the reluctant hero refusing the call to adventure. Mm-hmm. It's cyclical, refusing Chris. It's all cyclical. It rhymes.
It's poetry. I mean, it rhymes.
Like, I was, your father sent me. I'm here to rescue you.
I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't even think about that.
But he literally says the same line.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, oh, I'm so
your
excited
father
to watch
sent
that.
Me. I'm here to rescue you.
I can't wait to see that
again. He says the same exact thing.
That's so cool.
That sequence. Okay, so speaking of details that I was like, great. Like, they really thought this out. The fact that Obi-Wan punches a guy and grabs his hand because it hurts so bad because he's never had to punch anyone before. Like, the way he has to fight people where it's like, he's a skilled fighter, but he's not good at hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
It's not, like, what he does.
And the fact that he doesn't... I think, like, there was a thing throughout the first... two episodes for the most part where I was thinking, like... I thought that him not using the Force was... And I think they were setting this up to be, like, this is his commitment to, like, being in hiding. Like, he's withholding his powers, but they reveal that it's like, I think it's brilliant. Like, he's fully disconnected himself from the Force. He's retreated from the Force, which wasn't what I assumed had happened or what I interpreted. You know, I think I expected it was like, well, he wasn't using it, but that's not the same thing or something. But it's like, no, he's completely shut himself off from the living Force. And that's why it's so difficult when he finally engages it, you know?
That was, like, my other favorite moment. It's like he doesn't even know if he can.
Right.
Yeah. He's terrified because
it takes an emotional moment for him to drive to that point. Like, it has to be, like, a visceral gut reaction for him to save Leia at that point.
And it's an effort.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he like struggles.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He can't
like
do
he doesn't
it.
Know if it's gonna happen, but then he's feeling so much in that moment. I mean, I think kind of leading up to that, we're talking about the kind of the moments when we felt it. I have to say the Kumail scene is where I picked up on it, because I think you rely on a lot in the Attack of the Clones. Obi-Wan kind of plays detective, and he's going to the diner. Mm-hmm. He's getting the stitch. He's order up, and he starts to do that, and you start to see glimmers of his Attack of the Clone prequel past come to him, where he knows this guy's not a Jedi, and he doesn't even have to be the connected to the Force. He knows this guy's swindling. He knows what's like back when they used to do like, yeah, like the haunting thing. You remember, like, you'd go in a room.
Oh, like,
and,
it's all like smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of. And so he could see right through this, and it is very satisfying to watch. It harkens back to when you see Jedi enter a room in like the prequels. You're like, well, look out. Like,
they even do a lot of his like cheesy, like he's just kind of half hiding behind a wall kind of stuff.
Yes, exactly. Or you'd like see him and then he like shows up. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I will be neither seen nor heard.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, Kumail is really funny in that.
Yeah, like, really funny.
Like, what a great use of him.
Yes.
To like really, and just be like, hey, here's a new angle in the post Jedi world. That,
yes,
like, of course there would be someone this low
pretending to be a Jedi. It's like, I love credits.
I found it very funny. Tonally, though, it did feel very disconnected to the first episode, even though they had the Leia portion. And so that was a little off-putting to me initially, sure. But I grew to enjoy
it. So the thing that I totally get you. The thing I think that saved it for me is that Kumail just like inherently as a performer is very funny, but also like has a lot of pathos. So I think that he brings that. So it's like, I thought that worked to the point that when he was like helping him at the end, and we'll see how that shakes out, I was like, I thought for a second, I was like, maybe he is really a Jedi
who's pretending to be a fake
Jedi.
I kept going back and forth. I wasn't 100% certain.
I thought he was a Jedi. But
yeah. I thought it was fake too. I don't think we're going to see him. I think we're done with young Leia, other than a couple of scenes in the next episode.
I agree with that as well.
I think this, because they also they've talked about numerous times how even though Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau are not involved in this, which actually one thing that I think is pretty heartening that I think we all should feel good about is that they're making another good series without the two of them having to do everything. And yes, we have our own issues with Jon Favreau. We have our own issues with The Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett. But thankfully, they can do more than just rely on those two shepherding everything, which I'm just glad about that. Because it just means that there's more Star Wars to be had and more different points of view that don't have to always have them leading the way. But
from
within that
point of view, three out of four.
I would say that I think they talked about how they were trying to say, hey, Obi-Wan, you can't be just like the Mandalorian and have it be the lone wolf and cub and have the next four episodes be about him protecting Leia. And I could be totally wrong about this, but I just think that if we're going to get, well, I guess the Anakin confrontation and Vader confrontation, because we know they've already teased it, could come with Leia around there as well. But I just can't imagine that she's going to be part of it regularly throughout the rest of the series, throughout the last of the four episodes. But
yeah, I mean, it'd be cool if this was just like a nice character thing to have him interact with her. Because I think there were so many little moments with her that, you know, there was the more obvious stuff where he like is like, you remind me of someone I used to know. She died a long time ago. And I was
works.
It's brutal. Well,
I was like, that wasn't that long ago.
10
like,
years. At this
point. 10.
Is
ten
she
years.
Supposed to? Oh, she. Yeah.
It's 10
she's
years.
10.
Yeah. Are you telling me she didn't look at a picture of this guy when she's like, yeah, I got to put this secret plan on this thing. I'm not going to see what this guy looks like. I'm just going to say his name. She didn't see one picture of him this whole time?
You're back in a new
home.
You're back in a new
home. You helped my father in the clone.
Yeah.
Race.
How
like,
did she even
like,
know who he was?
Just
how did she even
name?
Know? She just like,
Obi-Wan. Have we
who
ever
have
seen
a picture
any?
Of him?
But she had to know his address. She had to know he was on Tatooine.
How would she know he's on Tatooine now?
She
put
sent
out
the
like
droid
an open
there.
Signal. She put an open signal out there.
She sends the droid. Bail Organa tells her, get this. You helped my father in the Clone Wars.
I'm pretty sure Bail had a picture of him on his mantle.
Have you ever seen a picture in Star Wars?
I think it's a painting.
I've seen
Hollows.
In Rebels, and there's also within Clone Wars, there's like murals of leadership of queens and kings.
And Sabine is an artist, Ryan.
My God. Anyway.
I do want to touch on one thing that I'm very curious, because we talked about this in our text thread before we joined the podcast. I thought for the first time, and I don't think that we're all in agreement on this, but I actually thought, even though this is still one story split into six parts, it felt more television episodic, where you actually, to me, had a story that was completed within that 1 hour of a portion of the larger story, meaning that you're introduced to Obi-Wan. He doesn't want to be part of anything. He's removed himself from the Force. But at the end of that episode, he opens himself back up to it and is willing to go on this adventure. Then the next episode is the rescue. And the rescue does happen before the end of this episode. Now, is there more potential with Leia? There could be. But I kind of I felt more satisfied in a episodic television nature in this than any of the Marvel series, than any of the Mandalorian or Book of Boba Fett. Like, I thought that someone has thought about this and said, we are doing one long story over six parts, but we're going to make these individual episodes satisfying, that you don't just feel like you got clipped off in the middle of something.
Yes, it felt like the same thing that Breaking Bad does, where it's like, I keep equating Breaking Bad because I think it's a very well-made TV show in that respect, but you do have a beginning, middle, and end of every episode.
Yeah. That's the
Mean, it's hard to tell yet because there's only been two episodes and I watched them today.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like when there's six, it might start to like mash a little bit. But the two episodes did seem like drastically different. Like, one episode ended like with him like accepting the call, and then like this one was him like doing stuff. So if it continues on like that, that'd be cool. That'd be great.
I acknowledge and agree to a point with what everybody's saying. Like, I see the beats and I see the like break points, and I also see the different sort of feeling of each episode, but I wouldn't agree. And in fact, I'd say that like, I think like, of what we've gotten so far, I think The Mandalorian to me feels more episodic and more designed to be episodic. Not as much season two. I think season two really leaned into like the larger season narrative, but season one, I was like, this is very episodic, and they've peppered in a serialized story over it.
There's the egg episode.
To me, I think you're referring on to the text chain. I said the message that like, this to me very much feels like a movie that's being protracted over six episodes, and I can't help but think, if you took that, and I loved both episodes, I really did, and I don't want less. So what I'm going to say is a paradox and a contradiction, but like, I do think that the first episode could be the first 15 or 20 minute setup of a film. The second episode could be sort of the rising moving into the action, and could also be quick, and I don't feel like it actually got resolved. He got her, but he didn't close the loop. He didn't return her to her parents. Sure. You know what I mean? So I don't agree with how you felt about it, but I see how it is working. I'm glad it's working that
way. I think it really depends on what this episode three brings. Put that calendar down, Sam. I think it really depends on what episode three brings, because I guess one aspect of television that I hadn't thought about is that you can elapse time without showing story. Like, the next scene that can be home doing whatever, where it's like that the Leia episode might not work if it's a movie, because you might not have a movie where you're like, I don't want to do this, okay, I'll go find her, and then you find her, and then like, that would just be a very disjointed, odd movie to have. So we'll find out. Like, if they continue right where they left off in episode two to three, that will, I think, will kind of set the course of what we're going to see here. But if we're thrown further in time, if it's kind of a handshake to Bail Organa and saying thanks for finding her, then I think we might be in store for another adventure for the next episode.
But I mean, Kumail directed. Yeah, I guess you're right. What you're saying is you could skip the scene, but Kumail sent him somewhere where someone is there who can help.
Yes, you're right.
So, oh, that's like, right. Where did they?
So my expectation is that we're going to see that as opposed
to. That's a very good point. I thought they could just take that ship and go back to Alderaan.
That's what I thought. But you're right. It's a very automated. Good point. It's an automated ship.
Oh, is that not what they're doing?
No, they're he's right. Kumail sent him somewhere to.
Kumail was like, "There's an automated ship here. Take this and take this like card or whatever, and it's like." Yeah, it's going to take them somewhere.
Gives them a spike.
Well, then that's not happening. We're getting Leia we're getting Lone Wolf and Leia.
Has always been the Star Wars universe, though. It's an old person bringing a young person along for a ride. That's every Star Wars thing. It's literally.
Can we talk about that ending?
So good.
Yes. Like, whoa. In terms of, go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, that to me felt like a very television ending. A very nice cliffhanger button to an episode that was a nice setup to the next thing. But I do want to say, Sam, your point of like, I think there's great episodic television that is like almost a adventure of the week, like The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. But then there's great episodic television that still serves larger serialized story that's still satisfying an individual episode. Anyway, Sam, or Ryan, go ahead on that last bit. Yeah.
Well, no, it was just, it was really affecting to me because it's putting us at a point in the timeline. Okay, so every time someone has run into Vader that we've seen that knew him as Anakin, namely Ahsoka, really, has been like the main one that we've seen that do that. They're aware of like what he is now. So like in Rebels, when Ahsoka and Anakin / Darth Vader have that like confrontation, she has that sadness of like, he used to be my friend, but she also has like that anger of like, you're terrible and it's sad to me. But like, you know, the vulnerability and like sadness that brings to the fact that like when he first realizes he's alive, that he's like, I should call out to him.
Yeah.
Like that was crazy. Like it's not in terms of how affecting it was. I was like, it really snuck up on me.
So it was, so I also, and this, I mean, I hope this doesn't like, I don't know, maybe I deserve to like be deducted several fan points or something, but like
the here we go.
First thing was like, it hit me that I didn't go into the series thinking or remembering or expecting that Obi-Wan thought Anakin was dead. I went into it like, I have the viewer's omniscient like knowledge that it's like Obi-Wan leaves him living, the Emperor comes, turns him into Vader, and so in my mind, like I forgot that Obi-Wan's point of view, he probably would die there. He left his friend to die. He wouldn't kill him, but he left him to die. And
are you saying that you assume that he knew that he's Darth Vader at this point?
I'm saying
like going in.
I'm saying, yeah, basically, yeah.
Like, I thought, he has the knowledge we have, he's this terrible guy now.
Like, he knows he's alive, and he knows he's Vader, and that's the great loss. He let his friend become Darth Vader and rule the galaxy or whatever. But when they reveal that he's alive and that hits Obi-Wan, that hit me first, where I was like, wow, he does. And then, Ryan, it's compounded by the fact that, like, I never in a million years would have thought that his next move, like, it's risking the mission. It's doing everything that he should never do, and he's directly contacting him.
But it's again because he doesn't even know. Like you said, it's like he does. I had the same thought you did, which I was going in being like, they say Darth Vader, he knows who that is, he knows that it's like he's partly responsible, blah blah blah, but that the revelation is that Anakin, that he didn't die, that he just left him to die,
right?
And now his friend is out there thinking that, like, he's like, oh my god, it was bad enough when I thought that I killed my friend. Now I know that my friend is living knowing I left him to die.
Well, and that I left his friend is still tormenting and murdering thousands of people.
Yeah, and what's worse, he's this guy, like,
it's gone far worse than he could have possibly imagined.
Yes.
Because Sam, he does know what Vader is in a galactic context, right? Probably. Right.
Like, I don't know that he does, because
I don't know.
Maybe not.
I don't know that he does. Well, that was going to be my point. Isn't there a giant birthplace of Darth Vader sign on Tatooine that everybody sees when they land?
Exactly. You're less. So that must mean that throughout this series, the fact that Vader knows, that Luke is his son. Either there's a Force thing going on there, which is an easy movie explanation, or somehow Obi-Wan fails in truly protecting them.
Oh, that would be another devastating thing for to happen, is to, like, him, that secret get out if he doesn't know.
Yeah, exactly, because he Darth Vader clearly, by the trilogy, knows that Luke has a sister, and he knows that Luke's his son, and he knows he has a sister. So I think there must be something that to play with that in their confrontation. My fear with this is that...
That's interesting.
That the...
Oof, that's going to be so gutting.
I hope the story, though, is not... I hope what we're not doing here is, like, building this kind of hypothetical fake story, that fan service of, like, oh, man, once they meet again and they fight again because of the whole high ground stuff. Like, I hope we're not building, and I know they've been training with their lightsabers and they've talked about it and the stuff. Like, to me, that was never the point, was them fighting. Like,
but I hope they're doing it. They're definitely
doing it. And that's, like, and this last scene where you see him angrily in the tank, like, I get that they're reaching out to each other, but I think it's like, I don't think it's much more than what we're seeing on the surface. I think Vader's angry. He's bad guy. I think Obi-Wan feels bad, but I think that's all we're going to get there. And I think when we see each other, I think it's just going to be a fight. Like, that's my fear. Based on how they're treating Luke in Mandalorian, based on this stuff, like, I feel like I kind of felt a shift there.
I'm hopeful that you're wrong.
Yes, I am too.
But I think it'll probably be similar in terms of emotion to the Mustafar fight, where it's like they are fighting, but there is, like, this thing underneath.
Right, but that's kind of they earn that. That's two movies of earning that. Like, for me, it's never been about a rematch, and I think the show might be angling to say, like, ooh, they're finally gonna get that rematch, which that's what a lot of some fans might want. That's not what I'm truly interested.
Well, I'm wondering if it's going to be a thing like where it's like, I won't fight you, Anakin. Yeah. Like that kind of thing. Yeah. And it's like,
right,
well, I'll fart you. Like that kind of, you know?
yeah.
And then, like, I am curious if the ending of whatever this is going to, like, recontextualize things. You know?
It's possible.
I think there's no way that it can't. It's just, like, the level, the degree to what it does.
And it's interesting. This is putting us in the character's shoes because... Chris, you always talk about with episode 3, where you're like, no matter how many times I see it, I hope that it won't happen.
Yes.
Right? And it's like, we've seen this before with Ahsoka. We've seen this with Obi-Wan to an extent, where it's like, I now find myself hoping by the end of this that Vader has some kind of change of heart.
Right.
You know, that it's recontextualized in some way where it's like, he can kill Obi-Wan, but he decides not to. Or they have some kind of breakthrough.
Yes.
And it's like, that's not what's going to happen, but also the emotional journey of that, of hoping that it's going to happen and it doesn't happen, is what they're going through also.
I hope we get an entire episode of Darth Vader in therapy talking about losing Padme. I don't want, like, just complete, like, breakdown of who he is.
Yeah.
No villainy, just sadness.
It's just
that final shot,
brilliant. They'll never do this.
Yeah.
So this is 6 episodes, right?
Mm-hmm.
If at the end of episode 4, you know, Obi-Wan is either captured or, like, brings himself in to the Empire, whatever, then episode 5 is him, you know, like, handcuffed to a table, Vader interrogating him the entire time. One room,
good
only
Sith,
them
bad
talking.
Sith.
That's
That'd
what I
rad.
Want.
That would be rad.
It's good Sith, bad Sith with him and the Emperor.
Just know, literally, just like, he walks in and for 45
have
minutes
a glass of blue milk,
you know, they'll get nominated for an Emmy if they do that.
No, they're gonna get nominated for an Emmy anyway. That's just
right.
The Mandalorian think, got nominated.
Yeah, no, I mean, I that was my only kind of flag on that final scene when they showed it. Just felt a little like, oh, they're like, uh-oh, he didn't know who he was messing with. Like, I feel like they're disconnecting Vader from their friendship to the point of being like, he's a bad guy. Like, uh-oh, you've messed with the wrong guy now. Like, that's the feeling I got at the end of the episode.
I think their choice for him to say, though, that to have the setup of reaching out to him and saying Anakin.
Yeah, but then you cut to Anakin, who's, like, looking furious.
I don't...
It wasn't
is there
like
any,
a moment.
Is there any way for
I
him
have,
to not look furious?
Well,
I mean, you
could have
had Anakin,
Chris.
Like, you could have had Darth Vader walking down a hallway and just go,
yeah,
or something like that. Like, you didn't have to have. You didn't have to have.
The,
him,
I wish
sorry.
That people could see what you just said, because it was perfect.
To the audience, it was the classic Vader. When he feels something, he basically stops, looks up, and looks down. Like, they could
have.
So
something
I
haven't
like
felt
playing
since.
It, yes, exactly. If they're trying to play it that way, they would have done that. Instead, they show this shot of him looking absolutely insane,
seething,
all like
yeah.
gnarly, seething mad, like with a in a Bacta tank, just like. Literally, the water is boiling around him.
I'm not sure. Okay, so I'm not sure I'm buying what you're selling here.
That's fine.
I know you're not selling anything.
It didn't come off to me as mad. It was
no,
he
to
was
me
in
it
a back
came
of tank and he opened his eyes.
Yeah. To me, it came off as like manic energy. Like, the water is bubbling around him. That's visually
I thought
what
it,
I'm seeing.
Tank.
What, I know, but that's
tank.
Visually what I'm seeing.
No, sure,
I think
sure.
it. I think it. I'm with Chris that I did think it looked angry. Chris, I have a little more faith in the series and... purely because of what we talked about, like the ways these first two episodes surprised me with the depth of Obi-Wan's despair
sure.
and trauma
right.
that I'm like, I think they're really well, invested
but
in
yeah.
exploring that. And I think
yeah.
they're not going to shortchange.
That's
they
fair.
Made such a big deal bringing Hayden back. They're not going to bring him back to just be like vile and angry.
I
think
Star
they're...
Wars has always been about being badass. That's what Star
I don't
Wars
know,
is
though,
about.
Because the next time we see Vader, he's throwing people against the wall. Like, I think they're yeah. like, to me, that's my fear. And I hope
I'm,
it doesn't
I'm
happen.
With you. Look, it has to end. So
yeah,
I think
because there's not like, it's not like Darth Vader finds out he has kids and is happy for a while. And then unbecomes Darth Vader. Like, no, this is, he's on a trajectory. He's not, his mood isn't going down and then up. To me, that's how I see it. Like,
but you can still explore more
yes,
while
can,
he's doing
but,
that.
But I feel like there's a dimension that they're going to show here. That's like, how did this guy in the prequels become Darth Vader? We're going to show you he's an angry man. Like, this is. What
I think that alone, though, that might be like the big play for the end of this in terms of like recontextualizing everything, which is what you just said. That. He doesn't know that there's, you know, the Emperor told him that Padme died.
I think that's going to be the
he's going to. I think Obi-Wan's going to be like, this is the thing I'm going to say that softens him.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it like won't.
Yeah. And then, yeah, right. And then he. Yeah.
And then now Obi-Wan has to live with that, too.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, he seems kind of, Obi-Wan seems kind of
like,
wild
I,
and nice.
Yeah,
though.
Now I let him know they're out there, which is like the one thing I wasn't
right,
supposed
right,
to do.
They also
it's
did
all
the,
about
the,
failure.
They also did the mind thing though too, where they can like pull thoughts out of your mind. So if Obi-Wan
oh, yeah.
speak, like so, there's a lot of that. Which
I thought that was rad that she could do that.
Yeah,
yeah.
That.
You know, this is kind of the challenge of having two episodes to talk about in one podcast episode, where there's still a whole lot more that we could talk about. But
this is what
you know,
I brought up.
We're gonna wrap it here pretty in the next few minutes, and I just want to say, give me a few little things that stood out to you. I'm just gonna do a couple. Flea being in this, I honestly don't mind because it's like such a throwaway character. I just wanted to make the joke about Back to the Future, and that was
yeah.
fun. You know, just that, you know, hey, you know, what's the matter, Obi-Wan? Chicken? Like, I like that. But then also,
yeah,
I like the new little droid. You're probably never going to go wrong with introducing a new cute droid to me. That almost always is fun and sweet.
Lola.
And yeah, I think otherwise those were the two other things I feel like we hadn't talked about that I dinosaur bounty hunter was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
Was
kinda,
yeah,
I kind of
like ridiculous.
He felt like he was
cool.
out of the Super Mario Bros.
Yes.
movie.
Yeah, he
exactly.
was. He was.
He
was. He
had the right
everybody
movement of
the
his
dinosaur.
Face. Yeah. yeah, he had the right movement of his face. Horrible shot.
But those are a couple little things. What else? Little tiny things. Other than you know, obviously we can
I
talk
mean,
more about them
I,
later. But just little things you liked.
I absolutely loved seeing R2-D2's little thing pop up and be the blinking sensor.
Oh, that's not R2 though. That's a different astromech because R2 was on
R2's
Alderaan.
With Bail.
He's
yeah.
in. They showed him in the dinner or the dining cocktail.
Oh, because I saw C-3PO. I didn't see
yeah.
R2 there.
He's
oh,
in the
okay.
back. He's in the background.
So that's what it's like R5 or whatever. The one
probably.
That was in the Jedi Starfighter.
Yep, probably.
Interesting. Anyhow, I love that detail. I thought that was a very cool alarm system to have where you just bury
yeah,
your,
I love that.
You bury your droid. And then CNC.
There's a little guy in there.
Do we think they've got him under there?
Under
the
sand,
thing,
I don't know.
They had to push the thing up. Do you think Anthony Daniels was in the C-3PO costume?
Mm-mm.
No, he wasn't. I bet he was.
Well, he doesn't say anything, right?
No, but
I mean, he can do that with ADR.
There are two
anyway,
protocol but. Droids, right?
There's two.
There's two.
There's a silver one that has like a woman's voice.
Yes.
But the reason why is that he spent a lot of time training people for The Last Jedi in the casino scene. Like, I remember him talking about training droids.
I was just barely joking.
Did Anthony Daniels had a story about what he did for Star Wars. No kidding.
He's like, I must be at every Star Wars thing. That to me though, that moment when you first see him kind of eating by himself, sitting in the thing, it really reminded me of Rey from
Without a doubt.
The sequel trilogy. And I just
thought that food was
the way they cooked the food. It was kind of almost a very similar sequence where it was like boom, boom, boom. And that to me really said it. Like, that's when I was like, oh, he's alone. Like, that's the alone montage in Star Wars, is you work to get food, you cook the food by yourself, and then you sit pondering the galaxy. That's like, that is the alone montage.
Quintessential.
I mentioned most of the tiny little things, the details, but there was one that when they're like hiding in the alley and she's talking to him about how her little droid is broken, she mentioned something about how she like doesn't like, you know, having to be in her room or something, you know, like small that a kid would say. And he has a reaction where he's like, oh, like, you don't like it there. And princess. He calls her princess. And watch it again. I'm telling you, 25 emotions come over his face at once. And it's kind of an amazing, like, moment of performance. Because just like him saying that word, you know that he's thinking, like, one, that he's concerned that she doesn't like everything about her life. Like, he wants her to like everything about her life. But also that he's like calling her princess, which she is, but you could tell that he's like, but like, you're not, you should have been a princess elsewhere. Yeah, like, right. This isn't what it was supposed to be.
It's really funny. Mm. Like, you have to kind of almost internally think about that for a second, because I was like, oh, wait, she's a princess no matter what.
Her mother was a queen. And it's like, he's thinking about, like, your mother was a queen and I'm calling you princess, and like how close that would be to how it's supposed to be.
And he's, he's holding it to the old creed. He's like, he's upstanding his honor too to like protect her. Like, it all comes back.
I also,
it's a really
like,
great moment.
Doesn't he, I also watched it today and only once, so I'm blessed. But the other moment in that same scene, in the beat of that same scene, is like he's trying to hurry them along to safety, and I really liked the exchange about like she's upset that the droid is he's like, he says something about like keep that droid quiet, and she's like, it will be, it's like hurt. And he says, like, good. And then he realizes that he's hurt her feelings. Yeah. And so, like, he kneels down and asks about the droid, or asks something about the droid. Right. And it's that kind of thing where it's like, I like the other scene I was going to call out was, I was like, I loved seeing Bail Organa again, always. Jimmy Smith's, come on, give it to me. And seeing him interact with young Leia was really touching and actually also very heartbreaking, right? Because we know that's a doomed relationship for him, like that, you know, he's doomed, right? But just that both, I think both of them have these great fatherly exchanges with her in a way that affected me.
Sam, you reminded me, and this is not just because you and I are both talking about it from having kids and everything, but like there's a lot of father parent stuff that is going on in Star Wars these days, because the people who are making Star Wars are referencing their own experience with having kids. Obi-Wan trying to escape the bounty hunters while having a 10-year-old that he has to like keep in line and get her to do what he wants was one of the most like anxiety inducing things I've had. I'm like, oh my God, just think about there are people who have had to take children with them while they've been hunted by other people who want to hurt them. That's a real life thing that has happened. And I've never even thought about that.
Stressful.
And to think I can't even get them to do where I want to go when we're not being hunted by anyone. It was,
can't even get them to put their shoes on.
No. I just thought it was
she's
crazy.
Like stopping. It was really, and it's like also you're seeing her see the world for the first time. Like she's like seeing things. What is the.
We liked her. You all liked her. She's good.
I liked her.
I'm a fan.
But I do love that she wasn't a great writer.
I love
that she said this is the greatest place ever, and then it like cut to a wide shot. It was like so disgusting looking
and also like, dingy. When she like she almost walked into that big monster thing, yeah. And it like stopped her.
I will say the monster work in the series so, thus far has been impeccable. Like, there's been some really on the nose creatures.
Like a polar bear.
Yes, the polar bear, the thing where you could just walk through its legs. Just fun, fun monsters.
She
that
got,
were
I'll tell you what, she got 7 years bad luck.
You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that.
But I'll never not enjoy Ewan McGregor being like, fine, just the gloves too. You know, whatever.
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
I gotta buy it.
Yeah,
if make her happy.
He's so
fine.
Polite to everybody.
Very sweet.
He says thank you to the Patreon.
He's kind of like, well, I mean, he's kind of like a priest going through like this rugged world, like in a certain way.
Hmm. From a all right, well, warrior monk. We are going to wrap it up there and say we're done with our hello there. So I got it in, Sam. I got it in.
Oh, there you
thank
go.
Thank you.
Hello there.
There it is. Ding, ding, ding.
And we'll be back to talk
that's just
more.
Your uncle talking.
That's what I'm afraid of. He doesn't say
Chris,
that.
Chris, you're
that's
almost
John
always
Lennon.
A Beatle
that's
when
what
you're
I'm
doing
afraid
over
of.
But we will be
Saturday
back to talk.
Live.
More Obi-Wan for episode 3, as well as Star Wars Celebration Andor trailer. A lot more to come on the droids. Exciting times. So much fun to have quality Star Wars back and, you know, not trogging through 4 episodes of Book of Boba Fett again. Anyway, that is going to do it for the droids you're looking for, a Star Wars podcast. What they throw?
Uba. Uba.
Uba.
Uba. Annie?
Obi?
Obi?
Ryan, you got to fire up your Cal Kestis playthroughs soon.
Oh, we have to.